Good afternoon and happy Sabbath, everyone. I see we have some visitors over here that felt here before. Pleased to see them. You know, the wish that I just expressed to you was expressed in what we normally call, in the English language, words. Words and communication through words have been with mankind from the very beginning. As we read in Genesis 1 and 2, God put things in motion in such a way that Adam was able to name all the animals that God brought before him. Now, I don't know about you, I wouldn't like to have that job. That would be tough. It's not just because it's all these words. He had to create the name that undoubtedly was descriptive of that particular animal. And that, to me, would be an overwhelming task. So I'm glad he was up to it. But the fact is that that points to the fact that from the very beginning, words were a part of the fabric of mankind and the society that developed from that first couple. Adam, looking at Eve, had that enlightened moment when he said, "Now this is flesh of my flesh and bone of my bones, and she shall be called woman, Eve." So the communication was present at the very beginning. Words are integral to our development of plans to describe things, actions, colors, emotions. Today, the English language has over 750,000 words, and more are being created all the time because scientific endeavor and knowledge keeps growing and exploding, and therefore words are necessary to describe the new discoveries and the new things that show up in the fabric of life in human civilization. But words are the foundational blocks with which we construct our thoughts, right? We generally do not think just in emotions. We don't think just in images. Even though I may have an image of a sunset in my mind, in my imagination, or in my memory, as I look at it, almost invariably, the word sunset comes up. And so thoughts are foundational to everything that we do. Let's look then at the life of thought. I'm grateful to Mr. McKillen because he described a lot of actions, all of which have a foundation and origin. We will explore that. Let's go to Proverbs 23, the wonderful book of Proverbs, chapter 23, and verse 7. "For as he thinks in his heart, so is he." Talking about a miser who really did not want to give you something, but somehow led you into, and that's the specific context, but the fact is, the context is much broader. "As he thinks in his heart, so is he," applies to everything we do in life. The general context is that we make life by thought, and some thoughts lead to construction and building up and strengthening and comforting. Other thoughts are expressed in words that lead to destruction and discomfort and pain. And so thought is an integral part of all this. And in order to have harmony, we need to think in terms of thoughts that are creators of harmony, that are descriptors of harmony. In order to have peace, we have to have thoughts and cultivate thoughts that equally lead to peaceful emotions, a peaceful state of mind and heart. Because everything is driven by thought, and thoughts are built with words. So choosing our words carefully is an important thing. We, as human beings, have a brain with which we make, together with the spirit in man, thoughts. We create these thoughts. These thoughts lead to certain actions, These thoughts shape the conditions of our lives, the conditions of our environment. Oh, it's too hot. Let me go check the thermostat. Oh, 84, no goodness. And I switch it down to 76. The thoughts, based on a feeling of discomfort, led to an action which transformed my environment. That happens when we are at the checkout counter, right? Depending on what thoughts we have and how we express that to the cashier, to the person who's going to wrap up our gift, whatever they're going to do for us, the impact will be felt. It will be felt in us first because we don't understand thinking it, but as we express it in words, depending on how it is worded, on the tone of voice, etc., there'll be an impact on that life as well as on my life. If I say something that maybe I shouldn't have said, somebody might punch me. Right? So there are consequences for everything that we do. It's inescapable. And thought is the driver of all that. And that's why in Proverbs we are told, as he thinks in his heart, so is he. We're talking about a state of being that is not something that we can separate, that we can do surgery on, from the thoughts. The thoughts lead to the state of being, lead to emotions, lead to action, and action continued creates habits, and habits continued create a destiny. That is generally how life out there goes, barring God's intervention. Now, in Matthew 7:8, we find something that is interesting because it puts the responsibility squarely on us. Matthew 7, part of the Sermon on the Mount. And Christ says, starting in verse 7 of Matthew 7, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. Now, all of these things are driven by thoughts and words. If I am going to ask for something of a person, of God, of a friend, of the boss, of an enemy who's threatening me, if I am going to make a request, I need to think about it, which is based on words, and I need to express it in words so that the person hopefully understands and gives a favorable, we hope, response. There's no escaping that dynamic. That is how things are. And so ask and it will be given to you. Energy needs to be put into thinking through, what am I going to ask? Why am I going to ask? Why do I think I should ask for this? And when all those things are done, often indeed things are given to you. What you ask specifically, a raise at work. A little bit better understanding with a coworker with whom we've been having a little bit of a unpleasant, somewhat spiny action-reaction in the last 2, 3 days, weeks. Seek and you will find. And again, if I'm seeking something, I have to first think about it. This doesn't just happen automatically. And again, words come into the form of a thought with which I think I need to look for this. As my daughter so clearly put it when she was little, Daddy, just Google it. She gave me a pathway by which what I was seeking might be found. And indeed, I found them. And knock, and it will be opened to you. Now, I've knocked at many doors that never opened, but I've also knocked at some that did open. Some interactions were pleasant, some were not. But the fact is, at some point in time, if the people are inside, you knock on that door, and it will be opened. But again, that cannot be done without thought. And therefore, what we think is critical in approaching the door. It's critical in those things that we seek. It's critical in those things we're going to ask. It can't be done willy-nilly with the toss of the dice. I mean, you can try it out. Let me know how it turns out. But generally speaking, it needs to be thought through. And all of it needs to be part of those things that God has told us, we need to be focused on. Mr. McKeelan did express that abundantly. There is a purpose for life, and we cannot really operate well outside that purpose. It's like a car is for my transportation. Okay, that's the purpose of the car. It was built, engineered, etc., and I bought it for that purpose. If I start running in the back of the house over the garden, the car may continue to function for a while, but it's not going to work very well, right? It needs to be used according to the purpose by which it was designed. And same thing happens to us. And therefore, in everything that we do, as we come into the church and come into the knowledge of the truth, we need, it's unavoidable that we will start increasing some self-discipline. Some areas in life where we were not very disciplined, as we go through the scriptures, we realize, I need to either stop doing that or modify how I do it or do a totally new thing. And again, thoughts and words have to be connected, but now connected to not just anything I want to do, but there's a purpose in life. And so whether I am shoveling manure or flying an airplane doesn't really matter. What matters is how I do it, the attitude and the awareness that what I am doing is being done for God, and therefore that purpose is what drives how I do what I'm doing. You know, I am baking a cake, I'm sweeping the floor, I'm cleaning a window. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. What matters is that the thought that drives the action be such that I'm aware that I'm either going to be making a contribution to the purpose for which God created me, or I am going to somehow be filing away pieces of that purpose. And there's no real gray area in there. It's either one way or the other. And therefore, the thoughts that we cultivate need to be done in that regard. Then comes some self-discipline, comes self-control. Again, thought has to be involved. We need to think, I used to do this, and I thought I should do less of it. How do we go from doing this every day to doing it only twice a week? Because it still needs to be done, but there was too much of it. Self-control and self-discipline now combined together. But again, all of this is driven by thought and driven by our realization that doing this every day of the week does not contribute to the purpose for which I was created. And when that thought is firmly established and we understand where we are, then at that point in time, self-control leads us to change the frequency with which we're doing something, or to abandon it altogether and replace it with something that in fact makes a positive contribution to that purpose that God has given us. Then, one of the things that comes after that is that by making these changes in terms of what the Word of God expects of us and tells us clearly, and exercising self-discipline, exercising self-control, making changes in some of the things that we do, we go to a process of, in a sense, self-purification. As we abandon things that God clearly tells us are not good for us or that will lead to miserable results, we are purifying ourselves. It's not absent the power of God and God's Spirit, but our actions lead to those changes as we are directed through the scriptures by the power of God's Spirit. And therefore, we notice the change of circumstances as we do these things. Anybody that you care to share with will tell you that, when I started understanding the truth and I started doing this and I stopped doing that, my life circumstances started changing. We impact the environment, we impact other people's lives, we impact what happens to us because we change how we do things. Again, self-control, self-discipline, self-purification. And like the garden, you know, people wonder, why did God put Adam and Eve in the garden? I think I may have, at least in my opinion, a slight answer. The garden is the place where, as a city dweller, I see without fail every single time when I put corn down, it would be utter foolishness to expect tomatoes to grow from that, right? If I put lettuce seeds, I'm not going to get an orange tree. It just will never happen, not in 1,000 years. no matter what the proponents of evolution say. The genetic code is just too different. And the same thing happens in the life of thought. Depending on what thoughts we cultivate, good thoughts lead to good fruit. Bad thoughts lead to bad fruit. There's no really escaping this. In John 15, 14, Christ tells us, "You are my friends." That is the new identity you gain. That is the state of being that you acquire. "You are my friends if you do whatever I have commanded you." Right? I gave a message last year about the price of friendship. That's the price. I become his friend if I do whatever he commands. But in that process of doing whatever he commands, with the purpose of becoming his friend, my life is transformed. This is unavoidable. There's just no way to continue being what I was and become a friend of Christ. Mentioned epigenetics before. As we change behaviors, our DNA is very dynamic, and some genes are suppressed and some genes are activated to favor and support this change of behavior that I have now. God engineered it in a way that is just mind-blowing, literally in that sense. The word is overused, but it is a mind-blowing thing when you start really looking at what happens as you change behaviors by God's direction. And so, again, thought is what is driving every one of those actions. These are not actions that can just happen. We need to study, we need to understand, we need to take some steps, we need to compare to what was happening. And so it's a very dynamic process, but all of it is driven by, again, thought, which as we think, we become. As we think, we be, right? The law of the garden is always at work. Jeremiah 29:11, because we are not the only beings in the universe that think, right? And God made sure to give the people of Israel a message through Jeremiah that then was placed in writing so that future generations of his people would have the ability to see this and realize that this is, in fact, how things are. Jeremiah 29, starting with verse 10, "For thus says the Lord, after 70 years are completed at Babylon." So the people went into exile. The vast majority of the people, the survivors from the war and of conquest, went into exile. And he says, "After 70 years are completed in Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you and cause you to return to this place." God is thinking, God is planning, God is describing to this prophet what his plan is so that he can convey it to the people so that they know both what to expect and how to act. And he says, "For I know," verse 11, "the thoughts that I think toward you." We think thoughts toward other people, both friendly people and unfriendly people. God doesn't quite make that distinction there. He just says, I know the thoughts I have, the thoughts that I think, the things that occupy my mind about you, says the Lord. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope. This is his plan, and being who he is, this is what will happen in due time. But it all starts where? He gives us the example. It all starts with thought. It all starts with words with which the thoughts are formed. And so it's important that we consider that as we go through life and we face different situations every day, that we be careful because our thoughts, in fact, impact who we are and transform who we are. Christ gives us a warning. You have heard from those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you, if a man looks upon a woman and lusts in his heart, he has already committed adultery in his heart. And often, if that is not contained, it leads to the actual adultery of which those of old had been told not to do. Now, King David in 1 Chronicles 28:18 First Chronicles 28:18. Just one verse there. He is praying and he says to that being who had those thoughts about his people and conveyed it through Jeremiah many years after King David. He says, "O Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, our fathers, keep this forever in the intent of the thoughts of the heart of your people and fix their heart toward you." He's asking God to intervene and somehow influence the thinking process of his people so that they will not be carried away and get into the situation that eventually they did get into and ended up being taken into exile, conquered, enslaved, et cetera, with all the misery that is attendant to such conditions. Keep this forever. This thing that you have taught us, this covenant that you have made, these instructions that you have given us, keep it forever in the intent of the thoughts of the heart of your people. Because if it is kept there, as they think in their heart, so they are. So they will be. So they will then act and behave and operate and live. In our daily life, one of the things that I find for me, for myself, to be important is to constantly review what the goal is. In working through with people that gave instruction to us in times past, in my job setting, one of the things that consistently happened and then that I see in the books that they recommended as reference material is that goals must be written down. The chance that you will execute a goal until it gets completed, when you write down, is 90% higher than if you don't write it down. So why would we prepare ourselves to fail? Why create goals that we're not going to bring to fruition? We must write them down and we must visit the goal frequently. So God has given us a purpose. The purpose of my life is the general purpose of my life. I don't know specifically on a day-to-day basis other than live in a way that pleases him. But the purpose of my life, the end goal is that needs to be kept in written form in front of us so that we see it, so that we stop to think, so that we go back and think, okay, this day, did I live in a way that in fact did contribute to this? If we didn't think through the actions as the day was going on, did we think at the end of the day, did I live my day in a way that contributed to this? Oh, this was okay, this was cool, that one not so much so, that one definitely not. Is that something I need to abandon altogether? Is that something I need to change so that it makes the contribution? Because anything that does not contribute, either specifically or by the way in which it is done to our character, which leads to the attainment of that purpose and that goal, needs to either be transformed or abandoned and replaced with something that will in fact make a contribution to that purpose and to that goal. So that at the end of life, whether it comes at 105 or it comes at 16, you have lived in a way that God can trust you with that eternal future that he has planned for you. And so we need to live life in that way because that is how that is built. It is built by centralizing, in a sense, our thoughts so that we always have this purpose. There's only so much room in the way, right? It's a narrow way. Broad is the way that leads to destruction. It's not the path we want to take. Narrow is the way that leads to life. So it's a narrow way. There's only so much wiggle room, and everything needs to be executed in a way to the best of our ability as we grow, as we understand, as our understanding through practice and little failures and bigger failures, what it is that we need to change and how we need to go about it. And sometimes heavy-duty counseling is needed. Sometimes it's a 2x4 that comes from life, right? But either way, as we become aware and we transform how we think, we transform how we act, and we transform the results that come from that. We abandon this little side road to come back to the center of this narrow way that leads to that final goal ahead of us. And it doesn't matter, really, because if we direct our thoughts into consistent actions, we start with the smallest matters. People say, oh, I have such a hard time changing. Yes, most of us like to shotgun change. It doesn't work. We're talking about precision micro surgery, the one that is done with a microscope in the eyes of the surgeon. One tiny little step at a time. If you can't handle making a big change, that's fine. Nothing to cry about. You can talk to God about it. Divide that step into 20 steps. They're still too big. Divide it in 100 steps and start with the number one. That takes you 30 seconds to do. And do it with the purpose in mind, with the thought that by taking this tiny little step, I will make a tiny little bit of progress. But I'm making progress, and I'm not falling behind, and I'm not turning back, right? I'm making progress. There's an ancient Chinese proverb. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. That tiny little step, because 1,000 miles is a lot of steps. You can just leap 5 or 10 miles in one step. It's going to be a little step after a little step in the right direction. Eventually, the 1,000 miles will be covered. And we don't know how long we have in life, so we need to be focused on executing those little steps with which we may struggle a bit but are comfortable enough to execute. And then the next step is a little easier. One of the things they found out through a study that they made with a basketball team, they divided the basketball team into thirds. So there's three sections. One third of the team was told to just stay home and forget about basketball. This is a month exercise. It's an experiment we're doing. So they stayed home, forget about basketball. The second third was told, you're going to practice in the court every day for 2 hours, free throw. And the other third of the team was told, you will sit home and there will be some audio to help you stay focused. And for 2 hours, you will practice free throws just in your mind. Now, the beauty of practicing a free throw in your mind is that you don't have to fail any of them. Right? You can execute every free throw perfectly every time the ball goes into the basket. So at the end of the month, they got everybody together and said, okay, now we have a test. First, let's deal with the people that stayed home and didn't even think about basketball for this last month. And they tried them out. And their ability to do free throws, as recorded in their stats, showed that their ability to execute free throws had actually decreased, which is expected. If you don't practice for a month, yeah. The neural networks start breaking down and all the connections because they're not being used. And the brain is very efficient. This is not being used. Let's put it aside. Let's do what is being used. Let's work on what is producing stress, on what is being required and needed. Then they brought in the people who had practiced on the court for 2 hours every day, for 30 days. And their free throws had improved by 25%. Guess, I really want you to guess, what was the improvement of the people who only practiced in their head for a month? Go ahead, throw me some stats. 60%? No, but it was 23%. Only 2% off from the people who actually did. Because as you imagine, all those neurons fire as if you were in fact in court, if your imagination is working right. And so we see how, again, Solomon is proven right. As he thinks in his heart, so is he. Right? By practicing, they became far more able at producing the result. They were transformed. They were changed. And that's why imagination is so important. That's why thinking in the right way is so important. So now, Let's look at Philippians 4:8 for some things that we can start with. I know you know this scripture by memory, but it's okay. Let's look at it anyway, because it is very powerful. And it gives us a way to begin if we have no idea. Well, my thoughts have been kind of random for the last 10 years, but now I'm told to kind of focus a little bit. What do I do? And here we go. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true. If you haven't thought about that, take out your little writing pad and start writing down. What things do I know that are true? And write down 2 things, 3 things, 10 things, 20 things, whatever. Think about those things. Then it says, whatever things are noble. Oh, I hadn't thought about that in a while. I may take some work. Fine. Start with 2 things or 3 things or 1 thing and keep adding to that list. What things are noble in this life, in spite of the generation that we see all around us, all over this planet? I was talking to the people in France this morning in the French Zoom cast for the service for the French Canadians, French and French West Africa members of the church. And we were discussing this thing about, what do we do? How do we go about it? And one of the things that came up was this: well, you have to focus and do the things that you know. And if you don't know, you search. What things are noble? What things are just? Make a list. Whatever things are pure, from pure rainwater to anything else that you can describe sincerely as being pure. Whatever things are lovely. I was looking at some, I don't remember the name of the flower, it's a white lily. It's something else. But it was so beautiful. And that's one of the things that I can keep in my mind and examine and look at and focus on, because it is a very beautiful flower. Whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Logizomai. Meditate, that is thinking with a purpose and a focus and a reason to come to an understanding and to come to a conclusion that these are things I need to pursue. Meditate on these things. And in order to meditate in these things, that's why I said, please get your writing pad and write a list of these things, because you need to keep meditating on them. It's a command, it's in the imperative, it's an order, but also you need to continue adding to that list. So you have more things. And as you think those things, guess what? As you think in your heart, so you are. Another old saying, action follows thought as the cart, the ox that pulls it. And so therefore our actions are going to be directly connected to the kinds of thoughts that we have. Now, Mr. McKillen had lots of action scriptures, things that we need to do. And all of them have one common thing, thought. Can't execute any of those actions he was telling us to execute without first thinking about it and making specific plans and modifying how we do things if they don't work really well the first time. So, Carl Sandburg once put it this way: nothing happens unless it is first a dream. You see an acorn? Do you envision the oak? Do you envision the multiplicity of things that are good professional woodworker could make with the fabulous wood of that oak? It's all contained in that acorn, right? It's all there. Needs to be planted, needs to be nurtured, it needs to sprout, it needs to grow, but eventually it can be cut down and all these beautiful things can be made of it. But it is all contained in the acorn, just like our life. Right now we're little acorns, but God has majestic oaks in our future. The kind of oaks that are hard to find even in nature, because what he has is really difficult to grasp and understand. Do you see an egg? Do you envision the songbird that can be there outside your window singing and bringing joy to your heart? That marvel of creation, that a little animal like that can have this little chirping, and it's just like, that is pretty. I heard one yesterday, I don't know what it was, and I saw a hummingbird too, and I said, how does it fly like that? It's just a wonder of creation, of creativity, of planning, of thought, of engineering that God put into this tiny little creature. But it all starts with an egg. Do you envision in the purpose that God has given to us by God, what he has already promised that we understand? We need to envision that. Christ endured the cross because of the vision set before him. I'm not telling you not anything new, right? He endured the cross. He put up with it. This is what must be done because of where I'm headed. There will be challenges. There will be things that will come in our way that have a tendency, as he put it, Satan has many ways to distract us, to put little stumbling blocks in front of us. And God allows it to see, are we really focused? Do we really want to go where he tells us to go? Or we're going to let this little stumbling block derail us, right? So we can't travel a certain way within and stand still on the world without. As we make these changes in life, and self-discipline and self-control are built, our life is transformed, and the outside world unavoidably follows suit, just like the cart follows the ox that pulls it. God himself informs us in Galatians 6:7 for your notes. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. And it all starts in the life of thought. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Success on our purpose rests in the field of right thoughts.